It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Last night, starting around 9 p.m. Central Time, they figured out that the suspect in this case, who apparently over the last 24, 36 hours, he was a person of interest. They realized he was at a roadside motel, and they wanted to go ahead and make sure that if they engaged, they did it with the proper tools, so they were bringing in a tactical team. Well, they waited and waited. Tactical team wasn't there yet, but the suspect got into his car and started to drive off on 35. And apparently he pulled over onto a frontage road. There were police in pursuit of him. He engaged with the police. Shots were fired. And that's when the guy got back in his car and pulled the trigger and blew himself and the car up.
That was Steve Ducey on Fox this morning. If you're just waking up, the people of Austin, Texas must be breathing a big sigh of relief because the alleged bomber, they're pretty sure it was this guy. You just heard Steve tell the story about how he blew himself up. The police blew himself up. The police, I don't know how they knew. We're going to be learning more things. We don't know who the suspect is. The police say that the body is badly damaged. They can't confirm his identity. And so they have to let the family know before they make this public. So we're all waiting to hear that because we want to know, like, who was this and why in the world would you do a thing like this? The other caution is because there could be other packages still out there. Just because he killed himself in the last 24 hours doesn't mean that there are no more bombs out there. So people have to be very careful. Todd Pirro has more of an update with maybe stuff I don't even know. So let's listen to this.
I-35 South completely blocked off. And if you look right over my shoulder, that area directly where I'm pointing is where the suspect blew himself up. But again, nothing is changing on I-35 South. There are still flashing lights as far as the eye can see. To add something to Steve's really good recap of the events that transpired earlier today, one huge takeaway from the press conference was just how crucial that FedEx package, the one that exploded, the one that did not explode, both of those packages were to helping to identify the bomber. They had a person of interest for a long time, but that individual became a suspect once the information both on the outside of the package and inside that package became known to authorities. They were able to put the pieces together and figure out who this individual is. With that in mind, while the suspect is dead, authorities say now is not the time for the public to let their guard down. Take a listen.
There were several leads that led us to this person. We had a lot of evidence that came to us via video sources as well as witnesses. This was a subject that we had developed over the course of the investigation, but we became very interested in him over the past couple of days.
And keep in mind, another reason the investigation is still ongoing, not even close to being done, is because we do not yet know if this suspect, who is dead, had any accomplices that could still be out there and could still be wreaking havoc on this area that has just been through so much over the course of the last 3 weeks.
All right, Todd Pirro for Fox News, and that's the update this morning, and surely it is wonderful news, and surely this is what it looks like when law enforcement works together with the FBI and federal law enforcement and actually do their jobs and are honest. Honest brokers doing the jobs that they were elected or appointed to do or hired to do. It's pretty amazing. It actually does work when it works. And so God bless all the law enforcement agents that worked on this case. I think one deputy this morning ended up pulling his gun on the suspect before he blew himself up. So these guys were all over it, you know, doing very bold things. And they got their man. They said they would, and they did. So what we have to know now is, who is that? I think it's a 26-year-old male. I believe that's the only thing that we really know. I mean, maybe people in Texas know more, but that's all that's being reported for the rest of us. So stay tuned. We'll be talking about that more. I want to just give you a practical ask for a second. You know, we have Share-a-thon every spring and fall. And so our spring Share-a-thon is coming up April 17th to the 19th. And one of the fun things that we enjoy very much during the fall Share-a-thon is hearing your story about how American Family Radio, for instance, is making a difference in your life. So if you have something to say about that, maybe how you were motivated to become involved in the culture war, or if you have a story about how American Family Radio has impacted you in an extraordinary way, why it's important to you, not all of these questions. Yeah, we don't want, you know, you don't want to call and leave a 20-minute message, but just maybe just some highlights. Some of these things may trigger some thoughts, and maybe you don't need any help being triggered because you know exactly what you want to say and what AFR Talk means to you. So if you have something to say, call 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893. And they'll help you. They'll prompt you on how to leave the message, and it'll be easy. And you can repeat if you make a mistake. So don't worry. Don't be nervous. Think about it. You know, of course, you might want to just think about what you're going to say, but then make that call to 877-876-8893 and leave a message. And you probably will hear yourself during April 17th to the 19th. And it's so encouraging to those of us that are on the air. It's just great to hear your voices and to hear just a family. You know, it's just a good thing to have that interaction. It's good for all of us. Okay, so we talked yesterday about Hy Feldblum, who is being nominated by the president to be reconfirmed or back on the board of the EEOC. And we talked about how important, if you missed that interview, you'll want to listen to yesterday's show. But the EEOC, of course, makes a lot of decisions about employment, has a tremendous amount of power, 5 members on the board. Hy Feldblum is a radical. Did I say radical? Leftist. I remember fighting things that she was doing back in the early 2000s. And one of them was that she signed onto this document embracing polyamory, which is sex of any description, grouping people together in any sort of form, whether it's couples or triples or male and female or both. I mean, it's just pretty astounding. That's Hy Feldblum. And that's, she has said that in there's a, she said she couldn't think of any issue in terms of sexuality where religious liberty should trump the right to sexual freedom. And so that's who we're dealing with. And so there's a, AFA is trying to get the president to remove his nomination. And if you'd like to add your name to this petition, and I hope the answer is yes, you can go to afa.net, afa.net. If you look on the top, you'll see the petition, you click it on, assign your name, and let's see what we can do. I think we have 75,000, at least we did yesterday, have 75,000 signatures, and let's give them 750,000, 7,500,000. I don't know. I just think we need to have an impact on our president here on this, because this can't be allowed. And if you get confused, remember that the president has thousands of appointees. It doesn't mean he really personally knows who Hy Feldblum is or what she does. I think the Senate's trying to get her through because, you know, the Senate's they're real eager to get this one through. Go figure. They can't get the rest of the nominees through, but this one, yeah, they want to do. They've got, I know why, because one of the nominees is the wife of someone who's in the Senate. So, I mean, it's just, pretty corrupt, but what we do know, this much we do know, and this much maybe we could have some impact on, is that we don't want Hy Feldblum. She does not belong. She can have her private, horrible opinions. But she does not to be should not be placed in a position of trust in the government where she can do more damage, which she already has done. All right, so that's that. And yesterday was a very big day in the Supreme Court. Shannon Bream had a great report on it. Let's listen. Clip 3.
Blustering winds and pelting rains didn't keep hundreds of demonstrators from sounding off in a key free speech case before the nation's highest court. Today, the justices heard a dispute over a California law that requires most pro-life crisis pregnancy centers to provide information to clients about where they can find low or no-cost abortions. Several of the centers sued, arguing their free speech rights are infringed by being forced to support a message antithetical to their core mission. Justice Ginsburg asked the plaintiff's lawyer why this shouldn't equate to the idea of informed consent, quote, so that the patient will know what are the array of services available to her. But a number of justices questioned if the law is based on making sure potential patients are fully informed, why it's full of exceptions and carve-outs for numerous medical facilities and providers, leaving nonprofit pro-life pregnancy centers as the ones saddled with disclosure and notice requirements. Citing a statistic that 98.5% of the clinics subject to the law are pro-life facilities, Justice Alito concluded, quote, when you put all this together, you get a very suspicious pattern. Much of the court's discussion centered on the law's requirements that many pro-life pregnancy centers would be forced to include a lengthy disclaimer about what services they do and don't offer, often in multiple languages, in ads they run from billboards to websites. Both Justices Kennedy and Sotomayor questioned whether the disclosure portion of the law was overly burdensome, with Kennedy going the extra step of saying it could nullify the statute altogether. Post-argument, both sides said they're optimistic about winning over at least five of the justices.
Well, two of the justices asked today whether the issue was even ripe to hear. As California noted, it's really not been aggressively enforcing this law.
All right, I guess she's finished. That was Shannon Bream on Fox. And, of course, that was the arguments yesterday in the court. But we won't know the decision until June. And so we'll stay tuned for that, but that's an important decision affecting crisis pregnancy centers around the country of all stripes. I told you yesterday about the governor's race in Illinois, and you heard at the top of the show that Bruce Rauner, the millionaire, prevailed in the Republican primary against Jeannie Ives, who was staunchly conservative and unbending, graduate of West Point, strong Christian. And let me just say that Bruce Rauner, in spite of all the money that he spent in a blue state like Illinois, only won by 51.6% of the vote. Jeannie Ives got 48.4% of the vote with a limited budget, just word of mouth, maybe one campaign commercial. And that's pretty incredible. But it's also incredibly sad for conservatives in Illinois. And I want to mention this because, look, Jeannie Ives did a great job. I mean, she would be a hard candidate to beat. She actually, the Chicago Tribune endorsed Jeannie Ives, which is really, really, trust me, very unusual. She was such a strong candidate, and yet she was uncompromising, even in the moral issues. So candidates like her are hard to find who can prevail against even the media, who are often hostile to conservatives. But as the 2018 races come, and they are going to be coming quickly, the primaries, every Tuesday, there's 50 states, so we're going to be talking about a lot of them. I just beg you to now pay attention right now. Find out when your primary is and make sure you go vote, because if only a few more people had voted in the state of Illinois, a strong conservative could have been the gubernatorial candidate. And so now, as it is, Bruce Rauner, who was caved on everything, including abortion rights, sanctuary cities, Illinois is the 50th in bond rating of all the states, lower than California, because of its feckless choices. Bruce Rauner has broken, I think, all 44 of his campaign promises. And so Illinoisans are doomed either to have a Bruce Rauner or to have a Pritzker, who was another millionaire who has a terrible record. Now they have no choice in the general election. And that's why I tell you the only chance that conservatives have are in the primary. But the only chance they have in the primary is if people like you and me work, give money, and help them and get their friends out to vote. And it can't be passive. The left is not passive. They're out there organizing left and right and up and down. And so we have to take a look. We don't want to pattern our lives after them. We trust God, and we know that He is sovereign, but that does not mean we don't work to make things better. So Jeannie Ives needs to be congratulated for, she was like the David in that Goliath race, and she nearly prevailed, but she didn't, because more people needed to be out and helping her. And so we need to help people that are putting their necks on the line and their lives to try to save this country. We can at least get out and vote for them. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management. had a lot of credit card debt and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, does natural selection occur today?
Chris, God created each basic category of life with a built-in adaptability to various conditions. Natural selection can choose from the variety which best fits an environment. But note that this is not evolution. It's merely selection of genes which already exist. Nothing new has evolved. Recently, a population of island lizards was introduced onto a new island. In 20 years, they had adapted, and their average leg length was shorter. Evolutionists crowed that this was a great evolutionary advancement, but big deal. Natural selection had occurred, but not evolution. Natural selection is not a creative process. Creation. Now, that did occur by the supernatural powers of God. Back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Dateline, Illinois, the Shawnee National Forest. You might want to watch your step along Snake Road. The Forest Service closes that portion of the roadway every spring so snakes can safely migrate from the limestone bluffs. Cottonmouths are the most common, but there are plenty of frogs and salamanders and turtles and other slithery serpents. The Forest Service says folks are free to walk along the road, but no driving. And whatever you do, don't get too close to the cottonmouths. Last December, Texas Rangers pitcher Martin Perez broke his right elbow, fell down after a bull charged at him, happened at his ranch in Venezuela. Turns out Mr. Perez had the last word and the last bite. He had the bull slaughtered and served for dinner. Mr. Perez tells the Fort Worth Star-Telegram the steak was good, no more bull. As the saying goes, revenge tastes best when served cold, or in this case, grilled. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
What's really important for people to understand is that this company misappropriated data of upwards of 50 million people from Facebook. This data was used to create profiling algorithms that would allow us to explore mental vulnerabilities of people.
We need to find out what we can about the misappropriation of the privacy, the private information of tens of millions of Americans.
This is a big deal when you have that amount of data, and the privacy violations there are significant.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Well, that was, an employee of Facebook, the guy with the pink hair. He's the one speaking first about Cambridge Analytica, which was a, I don't know what to call it, a system that was hired and used among other clients by the Trump administration in the last election. And the story goes like this. Cambridge Analytica bought information from Facebook and used the information of 50 to 55 million Americans. And the rest of it is that they are inferring that they were sent fake news, fake information, and with that fake information, That's what caused them to vote for Donald Trump, and that's what caused him to win. Now, that's the inference of all of this. And, of course, that's a simplified version. This issue is very complex. I'm sure that most of you listening to me do Facebook. I would imagine most of you do. And yet I would imagine that most of you don't fully understand how this works and how it really is used. Scott Walter is joining me this morning. He's the president of Capital Research Center. Capital Research Center. Scott, thanks for joining me, first of all. Good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. Great to be with you.
Scott, Capital Research Center, I've worked with you guys before you ever joined, way, way back when your old president was there, I can't even recall his name, Terry, I think.
Terry Scanlon.
Wonderful, wonderful work. If you were to, in a nutshell, say what your mission is, what is it?
We investigate the left deeply and expose it widely.
And that is the truth. You certainly do that. You guys provide so much great information and have been doing this for decades. So, Scott, let's talk about this. I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you. You heard how I characterize the allegations against Cambridge Analytica and using Facebook information. Do you think that that's a correct? Do you think that's the direction they're going? And what part of that is true and what part of that is false, you think? The allegation.
Sure. Well, it's definitely the way that they're going because the left and the mainstream media, because, of course, the critical thing for them is to find an excuse for Donald Trump winning so that you can declare him illegitimate and it was all, and he cheated and all that. So they have to find something like that. And this is a fun new thing because it has a maybe kind of slight tie to the Russian collusion silliness, but mainly it's new and exciting. And you can get people annoyed at their privacy being invaded. You know, you're more likely to care that somebody is secretly taking your Facebook info than that, you know, some Russian somewhere said something. So I think that's where they want to put it. The tricky thing, though, is that it's way overblown in multiple ways. Now, on the one hand, you know, Facebook is dangerous and not our friend and not a wonderful institution. But on the other hand, the Trump campaign and its friends at places like Cambridge Analytica did is the same sort of thing that the left has been doing for far more election cycles. And that is, you know, all of us have, there's tons of data, Sandy, about you, about me, about any listener. There's your Facebook data. There's your voter registration data. There's your license data. There's tons and tons of data about everybody out there, and all kinds of companies for years have been trying to combine all that and analyze it and figure out how best to use it, whether it's to sell you products or to get you to donate to causes, especially political causes, or to get you to vote the way they want you to vote. And so nothing that Cambridge Analytica is even accused of is anything different from what the Obama campaign did in 08 and 12 and what the Clinton campaign did in 16 and on and on.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more. Let me just say that I would imagine you would agree with me that it is not no big deal that our information is being harvested and used in various ways. It's not that you think that's no big deal, and it's not that I think it's no big deal. The point is, in terms of how this is being characterized, and we're gonna sort that out in a second. I was reading, you saw this too. This is an article by Paul Bernal, who's a senior lecturer in IT at UEA Law School, and it's called "The Cambridge Analytica Scandal Isn't a Scandal. This is How Facebook Works." And he points out that there are three parts to Facebook's model. First of all, they design systems that allow the data to be used to target people. Secondly, they allow third parties to use this data and those targeting systems to their own purposes. And the first thing is they gather data from people in order to profile them. So they gather data, they design systems, and then they allow third parties to use that data and targeting. And Cambridge Analytica is just one of many. You guys at Capital Research Center did a really stunning article. I remember reading this, too, when Barack Obama was running, and that was the story about Catalyst. Scott, tell us about what Catalyst was and what you guys found.
Sure. People have to remember the 2004 election of George W.'s re-election bid against John Kerry. Everybody was sure all the way through the day of the election that Kerry was going to win because obviously nobody would vote for a crazy Republican like W. And so, and George Soros put about $27 million of his own money into the Democratic Party and candidacy, and they woke up and George W. Bush was still reelected. So there were two things, big things that came out of that. One was the Democracy Alliance, which George Soros also underwrote almost immediately after the election. And then the following year, 2006, Soros invested the first $1 million into Catalyst, that's C-A-T-A-L-I-S-T, and the person heading it was Harold Ickes, who was a former Clinton aide and one of the ickiest, if you'll forgive a bad pun. He'd been a mob lawyer defending hitmen and the rest in it, before coming on to the fine operation the Clintons run. Mm-hmm. And what they did, what Catalyst did, was it went around, it was created as a for-profit company, so there's no disclosure requirements, and they went around to the entire left, that is, both the political operations, so state Democratic committees, National Democratic Committee, and whatnot, also the labor unions all over the country, which really are another wing of the Democratic Party, in fact, the most important wing, and also the activist groups, Planned Parenthood, Audubon Society, you name it. And they got everybody's data, and they put together information on every, according to them, every adult of voting age in America, hundreds of millions of files. And again, it was everything you'd want. It was, are you registered? What party are you registered for? What kind of commercial information do we have about you? Your buying patterns. What groups do you donate to or are members of? And the SEIU and ACORN, if you remember that fine group, both bragged about how using this data was incredibly valuable for us in winning elections. In fact, they explicitly said, we won elections in 2007, 2008 because of our ability to use the Catalyst data.
Yeah, let me just give, by the way, there are some quantifying things in the article that Capital Research printed or published in 2012. Catalyst says that the data stored by all progressive groups, over 90 organizations, campaigns, and committees working with us in the 2008 cycle, that's when President Obama was first running, reached 15.5 million people, a difference of over 80% compared to 2004. But stay tuned. Overall, Catalyst customers were responsible for generating over 7 million voter registration applications. They completed over 127 million contacts to over 49 million unique individuals. And of these individuals, 28 million voted on Election Day, representing over 20% of all votes cast. Not finished yet. Furthermore, 82% of progressive activities occurred in 16 highly contested states. Progressives contacted 37% of all the people who voted in the 16 battleground states. That's to quantify the reach of Catalyst, Scott, which you guys did in your report. By the way, we'll put that report on our Facebook page. It's called Catalyst for Victory, How Nonprofits and Unions Have Struggled to Re-elect President Obama. But, Scott, it doesn't even end with that, because you guys, and I remember this well, too, when Obamacare was implemented and put into law, there was some very creepy aspects to Obamacare, and one of it was these monitors? I can't think of what they called them.
Navigators.
Tell us about that and in regard to this same subject.
Sure. Well, again, the left is constantly thinking, our side is so pathetic and by comparison. The left is constantly thinking, how do we organize people? How do we manipulate people? How do we herd them to do what we want? So one of the glories of Obamacare was not just that it took over control of a huge chunk of the economy and bent big corporations to its will, but also just having Obamacare meant people were going to have to sign up for it. And of course, it's not easy to, as we all know, dealing with government bureaucrats, it's never easy to do that. So the program created navigators. Obamacare has navigators to help you sign up for the program. Now, those navigators, of course, are going to help you put in your most precious information into the government system. So, of course, the navigators themselves will have that information as well. And even better than that, Who's going to, where are you going to hire the people to do the navigating? Well, easy. We can go to our left-wing nonprofit groups, left-wing unions, the Acorn groups that still exist just under another name, and we can give them tax dollars to have the job of getting these people's private information. So it's a wonderful scam.
It's a frightening, really. And we, you know, I know that you know, Scott, you and I just barely scraping the top of this. Let's come back to Facebook, because now we're learning more. Of course, the whole hubbub that people are going to be hearing about is Cambridge Analytica, which was the company that President Trump's people hired to gather information and use it, which is what all campaigns now are doing. They must, we must add, in order to compete. But now we're learning, according to an insider at Facebook, that Facebook let them, the Obama campaign, I think she was with Obama 2.0 or whatever they called it at the time, Obama for America. And she said that Facebook came into their offices and said, realized that they were allowing them to have information they shouldn't have, but it was okay because they agreed with them politically. Basically, that's the story. Anything more to add to that, Scott?
Yes, you're talking about a woman named Carol Davidson, and she was director of integration and media analytics for Obama for America. And according to her story, when Facebook discovered how the Obama campaign's apps that used Facebook were hoovering up all kinds of data about the people who signed up, that freaked Facebook out, so they shut off the feature. But on the other hand, they never demanded that the data come back, and the Republicans never got that data. And the woman says, you know, now there's a disadvantage of information that, to me, seems unfair. But she also said the Facebook folks came to our office in the days after the election, and they were very candid that they allowed us to do things they would not have allowed someone else to do because they were on our side, close quote. And you can even go to her tweets and see her saying exactly what I just read.
Yeah, so actually we'll post that article on our Facebook page too so that people can see it. Now, Mark Zuckerberg is in tremendous trouble. Facebook's stocks went down. I guess they tanked the stock market yesterday or the day before because of this news. Mark Zuckerberg is kind of hiding. That's what the allegation is. And, of course, he's in trouble because he allegedly helped the Trump campaign. No trouble because Facebook probably helped many campaigns. We just have a few minutes left here, Scott. I don't know how people should even, I don't even know how to tell them to think about this other than they just need to know what's really true and what isn't.
One thing is that you'll never be able to learn all the fine print of what you're signing up for when you do these things. So, you know, if you have a Facebook account, you should use it as, you know, relatively little rather than generously. You especially should never sign on to another app using Facebook, because then Facebook will hoover up all the information connected to that. And in general, you know, we have to hope that conservatives will set up alternatives to these social media platforms, because that's, in the long run, the only way to get around this.
It's really sad. You know, we've made ourselves, we're addicted. People are addicted to using Facebook for the most innocuous of reasons. And now it's going to come back to bite all of us, I think. It's not just about this political stuff. It's about the way they're using and invading our privacy. Just don't think that anything's private anymore. Certainly not when you use it on Facebook. And I think that's Scott's point. Scott Walter, Capital Research Center. Scott, thanks. I appreciate it so much. And we hope to talk to you soon.
Great to be with you, Sandy. Have a good day.
All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios. And of course, there's more when I return. Please don't go away.
And he has made from one blood every nation of men. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In the 1994 Holder versus Hall Supreme Court ruling on dividing voting districts by skin color, Justice Clarence Thomas penned the seemingly prophetic words, "As a practical political matter, our drive to segregate our political districts by race can only serve to deepen racial tensions by destroying any need for voters or candidates to build bridges between racial groups or form voting coalitions." Justice Thomas warned, skin color idolatry in the political system destroys democratic trust and consent. The current strain continues for failure to heed his warning.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
American Family Radio and Preborn are partnering to help save babies' lives throughout America.
Well, my name is Dan Steiner, and I'm the president of Preborn. Ultrasound truly is a game changer. When a mom comes into a pregnancy center under pressure to abort her child, perhaps the dad's gone, perhaps her mother is pressuring her. Most of the time in her heart, she doesn't want to abort, but what she needs is something that will give her the strength to choose life against the pressures forcing her to consider abortion. That's the ultrasound. If she hears her baby's heartbeat and sees that baby on ultrasound, 80% of the time she'll choose life.
Be a compassionate answer to abortion and help save a baby's life. Go to preborn.com now. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Have you heard the political left's gnashing of teeth about a company called Cambridge Analytica and its unauthorized exploration of Facebook users' personal information for commercial purposes? My immediate reaction was, wait, isn't that what IT monopolies like Facebook and Google do every day? Fortunately, Michael Brendan Daugherty just explained at National Review the double standard being applied here. Cambridge Analytica's sin evidently was not so much what it did as who it was helping, namely Republican candidates and, in particular, Donald Trump. As Daugherty observes, Silicon Valley has no problem with its products being exploited as long as it's by Democrats like Barack Obama, whose abuse of Facebook-derived data made Cambridge's pale by comparison. But the IT giants are now working to ensure conservatives can't do what Obama did. Time to break them up like Ma Bell before they abuse again. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Congress is facing a Friday night deadline on its $1.3 trillion spending package. And already the House has bumped back an expected vote until Thursday.
It's going to extend our week into the weekend, perhaps. But this just shows why this is really a terrible way to have to do business, where the final decisions are left up to four people.
That's a reference to the big four leaders of Congress, McConnell, Schumer, Ryan, and Pelosi. And both Senate leaders expressed optimism they'll be able to pass this bill. The text of the legislation was supposed to be released last night to set the stage for a House vote on Wednesday.
We got close, but we weren't going to let midnight stop us from finishing our job of negotiating it out.
Among the final issues, cost-sharing reductions for Obamacare, which Democrats have wanted. And the ongoing struggle over addressing the so-called Dreamers in exchange for border wall funding. But top Democrats said both sides are far apart on DACA and border security.
We're going to keep fighting and trying. The courts have given something of a reprieve, but there are going to be lots of opportunities for us to try and help the DACA kids.
Another concern, the risk of a government shutdown this week due to Mother Nature's inclement weather. But so far, the Senate Majority Leader doesn't appear to be worried.
What my focus is on is finishing this omnibus appropriation, which will fund the government through September the 30th, and we're going to do it this week.
There's also pressure on the Republican side to get out of town before a major gun protest comes here. Perhaps some deadline motivation.
Yes, all kinds of motivations to get this terrible bill passed, this $1.3 trillion omnibus. And this is actually a very serious problem. You know, tonight, even as today, Congress, the members of Congress do not have the text on this huge bill. It's only the four. It's Paul Ryan and I don't know if it's Kevin McCarthy, whoever his, no, be Nancy Pelosi. Paul Ryan, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and Chuck Schumer. Those are the only people that are able to see the wording of the bill. And it's going to be huge, just like Obamacare was a huge bill, so that members of Congress cannot even look at it to figure out. All they can do is read or hear about it or get briefings. And so it's just beyond disgraceful. It really is. And I know people are getting sick of hearing about this, but the reason I am continually motivated to tell you about this is because I know that there are good men who are spending hours and hours way into the night trying to do everything they can to stop this. And as long as they're there fighting, we can't leave them. We've got to provide the ground support for them. We just have to. One of them is going to be joining us tomorrow, Congressman Jim Jordan. You'll hear him tomorrow morning. We're going to be talking about this omnibus. Maybe they'll actually know what's in it, you know, before they have to vote on it. The deadline is Friday night at midnight. Now, let me just tell you that in this bill right now, as of today, is full funding for Planned Parenthood. It's a bailout for Obamacare to big insurance companies on the eve of when Obamacare really is imploding. The Republicans, under the leadership of McConnell and Ryan, are going to bail it out. There's also what's called the Fix Nix, and I have to tell you that according to Gun Owners of America, House Freedom Caucus, 40 of them, signed a letter that they would take down. Oh, this is House speak, so I got to figure out how to say this. In other words, they won't vote for this unless reciprocity is in it. Reciprocity means that you can gun permits would be reciprocal from state to state, so that a gun owner who's carrying, driving through other states will not get arrested and have his gun confiscated just because he's driving through another state that doesn't have the same kind of gun laws. So that's a huge deal for people who carry, conceal and carry. It really is. It's a huge deal. And so they're holding off for that. Also, I've told you that Fix Nix bill so that John Cornyn is so excited about has provisions in it that make it very difficult for some veterans to be able to have guns. It has to do with them handling their finances. It's a very objectionable part of this Fix Nix. And so Gun Owners of America basically is saying they may as well call it the Democratic strategy plan to take back the House bill if they pass this, at least for gun owners. Gateway earmark is still there. Also funding for sanctuary cities, just so you know. And then, of course, this is the reason I think Mitch McConnell is determined to stay there until this bill is passed, because there's a real special gift to him in there, and that is what's called an earmark for political party organizations. And bottom line is they're going to change the rules and regulations so that if you are an incumbent, your party's money, like Mitch McConnell's PAC, Republican money that's put in the pot to help people get elected, is going to have a huge advantage now financially over outside groups like, let's say, Senate Conservatives Fund versus whatever the Senate campaign committee. A Senate campaign committee will have like no limits or some, I'm not sure what the numbers are on this, but the provision is that they will be given a huge advantage to help reelect their buddies who are incumbents, while Senate Conservatives Fund will be penalized. I'm just singling them out to make this point. A Senate Conservatives Fund will be penalized and limited And so Mitch McConnell's all about that because he's all about reelecting his guys, the guys that do what he wants, the guys that stand behind him at the microphone every other day talking about something very important to them, of course. And so that's what's in this bill, and the deadline is at midnight on Friday night. And so I'm asking, we do have some signs that there are some things that have been eliminated. I know that conservatives are very frustrated because they're not even part of the discussions. They've just been shut out. But they're doing everything they can to stop it. And because they are, we have to help them. We have to help the Jim Jordans and the Mark Meadows and the Louis Gohmerts and who you fill in the blank. We have to help those guys, because if we don't help them, they'll be gone, and then there'll be nothing really for us to support and no person that we can trust. And so I'm asking you to call your member of Congress and say no, vote no on this omnibus. Vote no on this omnibus. It's a wretched piece of legislation as far as we can tell from what we're hearing so far. Tomorrow Jim Jordan will be joining us, and we'll find out 24 hours from now what more is in that bill or what's been removed. All right. So yesterday, quite a bit was made of a phone call that President Trump made to Vladimir Putin, congratulating him on winning his election. Let's listen to the president and then Mitch McConnell.
I had a call with President Putin and congratulated him on the victory, his electoral victory. The call had to do also with the fact that we will probably get together in the not too distant future so that we can discuss arms. We can discuss the arms race.
When I look at a Russian election, what I see is a lack of credibility. So calling him wouldn't have been high on my list.
Yeah, I'm sure it wouldn't have been. You know, I just don't even know what to say about Mitch McConnell more than I've already said. Always, you know, rushing to detract and fight against conservative principles. And I'm not saying calling Putin is a conservative principle. I'm just saying if he has a chance to get a shot in on the president, he does. You know, you could argue that it's not a great thing, the president, to congratulate Vladimir Putin, because we know the election was a sham. We know who Putin is. We know that he's ruthless. He's been ruthless for a long time. You know, this is not a shock. I heard the narrative goes something like this. How could the president of the United States, the current president, Trump, have such a friendly conversation or say nice things, or at least not say horrible things about Vladimir Putin, when he is responsible for, like, poisoning this man and his daughter in London, or when he's responsible for all the things he's responsible for? How could this president do that? And, you know, I have to tell you, this is not the first time Vladimir Putin has been involved in poisoning people. During the Obama administration, was it Veronchenko who was poisoned? He was just one. There were lots of stories like this. I also remember Vladimir Putin was already in power when that Russian submarine went down and all these sailors were trapped. And he was so unconcerned about that. Do you remember that story? That's been a long time ago. He is a ruthless man, formerly with the KGB. And yet Barack Obama, remember, told I can't think of his name, the guy who was under Putin, tell Vladimir I'll have more flexibility when I get elected this time. Yeah, and so he was like very happy about Vladimir at that time, meaning the President Obama, and that was not a big deal. And trust me, Vladimir Putin was doing plenty of bad things then too that were public. So don't give me that. That's all I can say. Don't give me that. I think the president does have to be careful. The reality is that this president has instilled really tough sanctions against Russia. And they're going on right now, in spite of what he says, in spite of calling Vladimir Putin. The truth is, the bottom line, the reality is that we have, under President Trump, instilled some very, very tough sanctions on Russia. So that's the reality. He can say what he wants publicly, but that's what the reality is. And also, remember that Russia, maybe you don't realize that Russia really is our greatest threat in terms of nuclear power, more than China and more than North Korea, because Russia has all of this hardware and nuclear capability left over from when the Soviet Union was so strong. And so and they have stuff all over their former territories that is not accounted for. So there are talks to be made that need to take place with Russia in order to sort of have some sort of a standoff or an agreement on how to move forward with nuclear arms. So that's important. So just to I just wanted to put that in context for you. Interesting to me, now you heard Mitch McConnell say what he said about, you know, he wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't have called Putin, naturally. He's such a man of integrity, but he will do the things he's doing in that omnibus, and that's somehow okay. House GOP leaders are starting to come out in strong support of a second special counsel. Majority Whip Steve Scalise, along with Kevin McCarthy, are calling now for a special counsel to investigate what how law enforcement and the deep, well, I'm calling it the deep state, they don't call it that, the Justice Department and others may have interfered in this election. And so that's interesting because Paul Ryan, neither Paul Ryan nor Senate Majority Leader McConnell have endorsed that idea. In fact, you heard, well, you didn't hear because we didn't play that clip, but Mitch McConnell was bragging on Mueller and what a great guy he is and how we need to let him complete his investigation, how much integrity. And speaking of that kind of thing, Mueller and his good friend James Comey, has been, through his representatives in Hollywood, trying to make a movie deal. I guess Hollywood's been reaching out to him. His book is coming out. It's called, it's going to be coming out April 17th, A Higher Loyalty, Truth, Lies, and Leadership. And you saw, we, I think, discussed the tweets that James Comey tweeted in response to McCabe being fired. Remember that? And he said, we'll soon find out who's the liar here, what the truth is. I mean, soon people, you know, soon the people of America will hear my voice and my side of the story. Well, interestingly enough, let me repeat something I said yesterday, because others are writing about this now, that in McCabe's exit, his post-firing statement, he said, remember that he's, one of the reasons he was fired was for leaking information to the press. But he said in his written statement post-firing that he not only had the authority to share, that's the word he used, that information to the media, but also with the, he did it with the knowledge of, quote, the director, end quote. And of course, that was James Comey. And this is what McCabe said. I chose to share with a reporter through my public affairs officer and legal counselor. As deputy director, I was one of only a few people who had the authority to do that. It was not a secret. It took place over several days, and others, including the director, were aware of the interaction with the reporter. So to pick up on this article I'm reading, if the interaction means leaking the information, then McCabe's statement would seem to directly contradict statements Comey made in May of 2017 in a congressional hearing. He was asked if he'd ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation, or whether he had ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation. And Comey replied, never. No. So it looks like it's possible that former director James Comey may be in sort of the same kind of trouble that Andrew McCabe was in about candor. Of course, Comey can't be fired. He's already been fired. But trust me, that could get him in serious trouble. And I think, and others think also, that Andrew McCabe may bring down other people in an effort to save himself. We'll see. This is just fascinating. And so just stay with it and continue to pray that God will give us grace as a country as we navigate these very difficult waters. Please don't give up. Don't quit. You know, God is able to work through all of this. I'm not saying it's going to have a happy ending even. I'm not saying that. But we do trust Him as we, you know, fasten our seatbelts and live through these very difficult times. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.